The Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you have questions about God and you want answers. Welcome to the program which provides answers, at least when we can. And that is the new designation for KCBQ 1170, the answer, or as they like to put it, the answer. Well, maybe it was an act of providence because actually, point of fact, long before KCBQ made that their verbal logo, this program has been answering questions for 10 years. Hard to believe it's been that long. Yes, you are listening to the very first new installment for 2015. The last couple of weeks have been repeat broadcasts aired during the Christmas holiday like we usually do. But I am back in the studio live to kick off the 11th season of The Bob Siegel Show. Joining me for this celebration is my good friend, film critic and short story writer, Mark Boobian. Mark, Happy New Year.
Special occasion. I'm very happy to be here.
Well, good. I didn't hear your mic at first, but now I'm happier to hear you.
Oh, okay.
Because your voice finally kicked in. But I think he said something about being happy.
Happy
to be here.
Yes, on this great occasion.
Yeah. He was real happy. Honestly.
Yeah, very
honestly, because I heard it.
Okay. I said it. So
all right.
That settles it, right? So today, I just wanted to go over some of the notable movies of 2014 because. Actually, 2014 was a terrible year for the box office, or for attendance in particular. It's the lowest attendance domestically in 20 years.
Could that be because of the big screen TVs we have at home and nobody is kicking your seat from behind while you're watching it?
You know what? I hear people talk about that all the time, but you know, I don't think that's actually it because movies, the big movies that make the most money, the biggest budget movies are the ones that really make the most money. That's the way it works. That's why they keep making and spending so much money on these movies, but that draws people to the movies because they're the event films like Star Wars, for example, which we would go see no matter what.
There's certain movies you just want to see on that big screen.
Right, and this year really just didn't have any of that type of movie. The Spider-Man movie, for example, Spider-Man 2, did very badly compared to what they were expecting. That's their biggest franchise, Sony's biggest franchise.
And I actually saw that. I didn't think it was so bad. I had not, and the new, I had seen all the old ones with, what's his name?
Right, with Tobey Maguire.
Maguire, but of the new ones, I missed the first one, saw the second one, and still, without even having seen the first, I actually thought they did a pretty good job.
Yeah, I thought they were okay. I mean, I'm not a big Spider-Man guy. I really actually did like Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, but the thing is that when you're biggest movie, the biggest thing that you make actually barely makes more than its budget, you know you're in trouble. So they're doing something where they're not necessarily making movies the American audience wants to see right now. And it could also have to do with next year, or this year, I should say, 2015, is a big push with big, huge box office movies.
What Star kind of
Wars,
stuff is... Oh, that's
example.
Right. Yeah.
So I think
I just dread the Star Wars. I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, I do too. Well, you know, it could go either way. So we'll see. I'm curious.
It's going to be Han Solo and Princess Leia going through a divorce, and Han doesn't go to his kids' basketball games or space ball games, whatever they're I'm just waiting for that.
I hope not.
I hope not too. I would gladly eat crow than to have one of my favorite movie franchises ruined.
Well, J.J. Abrams has done a pretty good job in general with the stuff he's taken.
I mean, so has Disney, and so you never know.
Right, when they're actually trying, and if they are hands-off-ish, they have been somewhat hands-off-ish with the Marvel movies. So the Age of Ultron, the Avengers Age of Ultron, that's another huge movie that's coming out this year, and that the last movie made tons of records, made tons of money. So these are big, huge movies that really people are looking forward to, when Spider-Man 2 really doesn't kind of hold a candle to that. So I think that had a lot to do with it. People's expectations were just not that high this last year, and the studios weren't outputting what people wanted to see. So as an example, let's go through the top 10 moneymakers domestically of 2014, last year. So the first is Guardians of the Galaxy. That was actually, to me, not a surprise because it looked good in advertisements.
Now, it's interesting because, big as that movie was, that you were not on around the time, and this is my first time over the air to ask you how you liked Guardians
See,
of the
now,
Galaxy.
I liked it, but
you didn't love it as much.
Unfortunately, the previews kind of got me set up for a bigger movie. I watched a little bit of the previews.
Since when have you started watching previews, Mark? I thought that was anathema.
Yeah. Well, you know.
I don't blame you. Previews show the whole stupid story.
I actually watched a little bit of the preview and left the theater when I realized it was a movie I wanted to see.
And when it has comedy in it, they use their best lines on the preview, so you already heard it by the time you see
it. And ironically, they set up the preview where the lines came quickly enough that they were actually very funny in the consecutive order they put them in, when in the film they were a little more spread out, so the humor was lost a little bit compared to what the preview had given, at least in the beginning of the preview.
But if we had not seen the previews, which we should,
hopefully you would like it. I mean, everybody loved Guardians of the Galaxy. I don't think anybody didn't like it.
Tell all of you, the last time Mark, it was back in the late fall, the last time Mark was here, I showed him a preview that I found on YouTube of Alfred Hitchcock advertising The Birds.
That's right, yeah.
He knew nothing about the movie, but for 5 minutes he gave a lecture on the relationship between man and birds. Funniest thing you've ever seen. You're dying to see the movie and you know nothing about it. That's the way you preview a movie.
Right, yes. And I would have gone to see the movie after seeing that, for sure. I mean, though the movie was a very different tone than what the preview was, but that's how Alfred Hitchcock did it. He actually had somewhat comical and tongue-in-cheek trailers, previews to his movies.
Yeah, that reminds me, Nick, have I shown you that, Alfred Hitchcock and the Birds?
No, I don't believe you have it.
Okay, hang around after the show. You've got to see that.
Yeah, you'd remember if you'd seen it.
Oh, I can't. I can't wait.
Going on, the second biggest moneymaker, not a surprise, actually more of a surprise that it wasn't number one, is the Hunger Games movie. Now, this underperformed.
Well, because it was the first half of the last two of the three.
Right.
Kind of in the tradition of Harry Potter. They really want to.
Exactly. They want to make as much money as they can. And I think it was a good idea. In general, I think breaking books up into multiple parts is, in the end, a good idea overall, because there's a lot of story.
Especially when it keeps Philip Seymour Hoffman's character alive throughout the whole movie instead of only half of the movie when the actor's not alive anymore.
Yeah. They filmed a lot of it up front, so I think that they were able to get him in the movie and have it work.
So you did like that? You liked The Hunger Games?
To be honest, I didn't actually see this one yet because I'm going to roll into it when the next one comes out.
So I gave it away. Philip Seymour Hoffman, he's not really in that much, Mark.
Well, I read the book.
Never mind that.
Okay. I know what's going to happen. Right. So that's okay. Right. I could give spoilers now. But I think that's part of the problem with a part one movie is people like me are going to wait until the second one comes out to see that one in the theater, but watch this one on home video, where no one's kicking your seat and whatnot. So then that's how I plan to do it.
You think they're going to sell home videos someday where this little contraction just kicks your seat and vibrates it so you get the full theater effect?
That rumble your seat, actually. Yeah. Well, but yeah, something like that.
No, I mean the obnoxious kicking of the seat.
Oh, well, yeah, I don't know.
Just so you really
feel sure if you were willing to pay for it, someone would make it.
Oh, I love it when my seat gets kicked. I would pay extra for that.
See, I don't get my seat kicked. You're the
Well,
the
when I
cloud.
Go to a movie by myself or with my girlfriend, I sit in the very back. But if when I'm going with a group of people, they always want to sit in the middle and get that prime seat. And they love it. And some cleavers kick in my seat.
Yeah.
But see, I can't go through that without turning around and giving them a dirty look. So, I can't let it go. So
that's why it's
a problem for me.
Yeah, that is a problem. All right. I don't care that much. So let's move on to Captain America now.
Mark's trying to go through all these movies, and he's just not captivated with my kicking of the seat talk.
No.
All right, we'll move on.
I've actually heard it before, Bob, so I know the kicking of the seat.
Yeah, but the audience hasn't.
Right. So, I bet they have.
Maybe they have.
Okay.
All right, go on.
Captain America, the Winter Soldier, which actually held the number one spot until Guardians of the Galaxy, almost 6 months.
Did not see that.
And that was a very good
movie. I loved the first Captain America.
This was actually much better.
Even better, wow.
Yes, it was a great movie. So I loved it, and I was very happy to go see it. The Lego Movie is number 4. That held the number 2 spot until Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay, now, is that the Lego Movie where they had, like, Batman as a Lego?
Yes.
Did you see it?
Absolutely awesome.
You liked it. Okay.
Hopefully we'll get time to talk about that one at length. That was one of the ones I hoped okay. to discuss. But, yeah, I love the Lego Movie. Nothing bad to say about it. So, okay. Absolutely awesome movie. Number 5, not a big surprise, Transformers, though, again, a big underperformer compared to what was expected. The only reason it made money is because its global take was so high. So this is, we're talking about domestic movies right now, only in the United States. There's another ranking for movies globally, internationally, but that's a little bit harder to deal with because the way Hollywood calculates right. money from those right. movies is hard. But anyway, so Transformers may actually end up not making a lot of money, even though it made a ton internationally. So that's... We may not see another Transformers movie. Who knows? Not sure. But Spider-Man 3 is on hold right now because Spider-Man 2 did so badly.
And they consider, even when you go over budget, which means you make money, it's considered a failure because they didn't make as much money.
Well, there's a certain amount they have to get over their budget in order to start making money. There's a whole bunch of calculations.
Oh, because I would have assumed that over budget meant that all the actors, producers, directors were paid.
Right, but one thing that's not calculated in the numbers that track the total gross is how much goes into the advertising budget.
And some, oh, I see.
Some movies have twice the actual budget spent in advertising. So when Transformers, which was a $210, $220 million movie to make, it's going to cost $440 million in the end. So... That's a lot of money.
Well, I can help them save money on advertising. Quit showing those frickin' fracking previews.
Crummy previews, right, exactly. See, that's my thing. I don't want to see those crummy previews myself.
They could probably save billions of dollars right there.
Right, exactly. Half a billion at least anyway. So number 6 was Maleficent, which I didn't see, but you did.
I did, and it wasn't that it was badly done, but just this whole idea of the wicked person's the good one, and the good one's the wicked one. Kind of tired of that.
Yeah.
Now, but it was, as movies go, it was not badly made.
No. Right. And I'm sure the production value was great in the movie because
Disney the special effects were really beautiful. Yeah. Yeah, there's no doubt about it.
And this was another movie that did very well internationally too. Star power seems to be a big driving force for movies overseas. So one movie that did not do well at all in the United States was Edge of Tomorrow, which is the Tom Cruise science fiction movie.
That was great.
Absolutely
intriguing.
Great movie.
Anything with time travel, I'm a sucker for.
Right.
But
and
it was
so
the twists and turns were, they were
this
wonderful.
This was a very interestingly done
time
travel
movie. And you know, you
got
to hand
movie.
It to Tom Cruise because, you know, originally he was just a sex symbol for women, but I mean, right, he makes really different kinds of movies now. He does cutting edge things. And
right, I agree.
You got to admire when an actor does. Hey, I'm here with film critic Mark Boobian, kicking off the new year, 11th season of The Bob Siegel Show. We'll be right back.
This is Dana Wright, a reoccurring co-host on The Bob Siegel Show. You only need to listen to this radio program once to figure out that Bob has very strong opinions on a wide variety of issues. But one of Bob's strongest passions is freedom of speech itself, even when such speech challenges his own convictions. So feel free to send Bob a comment or a thought-provoking question. You can reach Bob on Facebook, Twitter, or questions at bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to KCBQ 1170 and KPRZ 1210. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. I know there's a lot going on in the news, particularly with those horrible murders in Paris. I have much to say about that, but because this radio show deals with a variety of subjects, and because we're only on once a week, we do not always offer news analysis. I will talk about the Paris shootings next week. And Mark, I seem to remember saying something very similar about breaking news the last time you were on. So once again, you are blessed with the important task of cheering up our audience and helping them to forget the news.
All right. Well, that is a great thing.
Unless it's the bad news of what wins the Golden Globes tonight.
Right. Well, you know, who knows? I'm not actually looking forward
to
the awards.
You're not much of an awards kind of
person. Right. I'm not. You know me. But, you know, I'm into the big money-making movies. That's the stuff I like, which is why we're talking about that today. So what I was going to say about Edge of Tomorrow before the break was that Tom Cruise's star power, you mentioned him being a sex symbol here in the United States for a while. I think he still is somewhat internationally because star power really drove that movie to
a pretty
good take
internationally. You were saying he did better internationally than here. Why
his previous
movies didn't go over well here? Just poor advertising?
I think it was not advertised hardly at all. And the acting was absolutely astounding. Not just Tom Cruise.
He's really a very good actor.
Yeah, I mean, it's
you've got to hand it to the guy.
Absolutely great movie. I highly recommend it. Super good science fiction. Not quite up to the same level as Interstellar, which is probably about as good as science fiction gets, but still along those same lines. Really good
story. And we spent an entire show talking about Interstellar that's still archived. I think that was the last time Mark was on we talked about Interstellar.
Yeah. So I won't say too much about it today. That was it. Next movie, number 7 was The Hobbit, which we can talk about in a minute when we talk about Christmas movies. 8 was X-Men Days of Future Past. This was a movie that was for sure going to make money. I think a lot of people are really happy with the new series because Bryan Singer, who originated the original X-Men series for Fox, took it over again when they went back to do the reboot of it, so to speak. But this movie linked the two sets of X-Men together, the modern and the 1960s, 70s version.
Well, all I know is one of my favorite albums was Moody Blues' Days of Future Past.
Yes.
I think I've only seen the very first of the X-Men movies. I have not followed that series over there.
What you need to do is watch the first two and then skip
I heard that there's some you need to skip. I have heard
the
that.
The third one, right. But, you know, that's the way it goes. Singer dropped out at that point, he made a Superman movie that wasn't very good, unfortunately. So, fortunately, he's back with the X-Men, the thing he's good at, and he is good at it, so I'm very happy that he came back. Number 9, an animated film by Disney, Big Hero 6, which was a very fun movie, also a comic book movie. To my surprise, I walked in not knowing it was a comic book movie, but it was very good. Number 10, the last in the top 10, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, to me a big surprise, but yeah, I guess the studio was expecting that.
I hear that there's been three of the new versions of the Planet of the Apes. The first one was horrible. I've heard that the second two are good, but the first one was such a traumatic experience for me. I never went and saw the second two.
Yeah, the first one technically isn't part of the current two that have been out. So the last two, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and I forget what the previous one was called.
Rise of
the Planet of the Apes. Those are the ones that take place in the original series. The two apes go back in time, back to 1970s at that time, America.
Right. That one was called Escape from the Planet.
Right.
Of the
and
apes.
Then they get into this time loop kind of thing where they create.
And they had Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, Battle of the Planet of the Apes.
So basically, what we're seeing is the Escape from the Planet of the Apes was the previous movie, sort of. And the one now is a follow on from that. So it's the fall of humanity and the rise of the apes is what we're seeing occur. And so the movies are interesting. I didn't see Dawn yet because I just wasn't that excited about it. I didn't like the previous Planet of the Apes movie that much.
Did you like the original Planet of the Apes series?
Absolutely. Yeah. I did. And I, you know, but
I still remember Paul Lynde on the Hollywood Squares. They asked him the name of the final fifth Planet of the Apes, and he says, "Sick of the Planet of the Apes."
Right. Right. He could have said that after the Mark Wahlberg
remake.
That
would have been more appropriate. Unfortunately, right. Mr. Lynde wasn't alive anymore.
Unfortunately, But that would have been a good thing. So let's bounce around and talk about some different movies, not necessarily from this top 10 list. There's other movies that did well, given their genre or their timing. So I've got a couple of movies that I liked that I thought we could discuss.
Okay.
So first, let's talk about some Christmas movies. The movie I saw that I liked over Christmas, kind of liked the Hobbit movie, the last in the series of the Hobbit movies. I think I have mixed feelings about it because when I first walked into the Hobbit, we talked about the previous Hobbit.
We did a whole show. You're a huge Lord of the Rings fan of the books. You liked the Fellowship of the Rings
but
the other two you did not like.
Right.
And so that led you to be a little apprehensive when the Hobbit movies came out.
Actually, it gave me I just expected The Hobbit to be bad. So I had the pleasant surprise of it not being so bad.
Yeah, so when the bar is lowered, it's not as bad.
Right, so I had a very low bar. And I liked it. I liked the first Hobbit movie. The second one was okay. This one, I'm not as excited about
it. Okay, so I saw the first and the third of The Hobbit.
Okay.
What did I miss in the second?
I don't even know. That's how forgettable the second movie is. It's just sort of a...
But that's the one that introduces Gollum and the corresponds to the chapter Riddles in the Dark in the Hobbit book, wouldn't it?
Actually, I don't know. Because I think of them all as one big movie because they just continue that way. But
and he wanted to make them only two movies.
Right.
And the studio was saying, the others were three movies.
Right.
These will be three movies.
The trilogy is actually kind of traditional anyway. So, and I don't have a problem with him doing that at all.
As long as there's real story to spread out over the trilogies, and, which I wasn't quite sure that the little book, The Hobbit, had three movies in it.
Well... Okay, so he added some stuff to pad it out a little bit that I didn't like. He introduced this white orc thing with horrible CGI. He looked so fake in the movie. It was just, to me, off-putting. That was my one complaint throughout.
That's surprising because you'd think Peter Jackson would have a pretty big budget, which he did.
Yeah, but so he uses his studio in New Zealand, and they're just not that good at... I've never felt
that
they're good.
So why does he use them if he can afford something better?
I don't know. Because they're in New Zealand.
Loyalty, friends.
Yes, right. New Zealand.
Somebody gave him a box of cigars when his daughter was born.
Right,
like
in
that.
New Zealand. Okay. I think that's the key, New Zealand. But so anyway, that was a big complaint I had. But and I'm willing to give him that one. I just kind of rolled with that one in the first movie. But what I liked that he did is in The Hobbit, the book, there's this introduction of this character called the Necromancer. And nobody knows who it is. The forest that the hobbits go through with the spiders, that's called Mirkwood in the Hobbit book. It was originally called Greenwood the Great, but it was retermed Mirkwood the Great because the evil entity, the necromancer, his evil was spreading throughout the forest and making it dark and dangerous.
So yet necro is the Greek word for death, so was this a death-like character?
A dark sorcerer is what he was. And so they added on what was left out of the Hobbit, them going to find who this necromancer is and drive him out of the forest. Interestingly, they never find out who he is, and it's hidden from them by Saruman. In the movie, though, it's revealed to be Sauron, which I think was a big mistake, but that was a good
one. We'll talk more. These movies at least had good music, and a little of it's actually playing right now. We'll be right back. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle, so when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
Hi, this is Dana Wright here to announce that Bob Siegel has finally entered the 21st century. It had to happen sooner or later. Now, Bob's popular book, I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But, is available in ebook format and can be downloaded to your Kindle or Nook. Whenever Bob speaks, people are eager to purchase this book afterwards. But sometimes parents inform him that their kids will not read anything that they can't put on an e-reader. Well, now that is no longer a problem. So if you want a book that can help everyone in your family offer better answers to good, skeptical questions that people ask about Christianity, go to Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com for I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But, by Bob Siegel, now available for download as an ebook.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show with film critic Mark Boubian.
Thanks, Bob. So a little more about The Hobbit. One of the reasons I'm not that excited about the current set of movies that I kind of dropped off halfway through the last movie, kind of started not feeling it.
As did a lot of people, I've heard.
Yeah. But two problems that I think Peter Jackson has with his movies is he didn't keep the tone light enough. The Hobbit was originally a fairy tale as opposed to a myth. Very different settings. The Lord of the Rings was a myth. People getting their heads chopped off, you know.
Yeah, The Hobbit was a little more for children, and
Hobbit
The Lord of the Rings
was more
for adults.
Yes, he wrote it originally for his, I think, 10 or 12-year-old son. So it's very light in tone. The Battle of the Five Armies, for example, this whole movie, The Battle of the Five Armies, that's a chapter in The Hobbit. The battle is actually never told directly on screen. That's not described. Bilbo, who's the main character, obviously, everything's from his viewpoint.
And he wasn't even in that much of the third movie, Bilbo.
You're right. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, he was in it, but there was an awful lot of stuff without him.
All of it involves everybody else, really. And that's the way it was in the book. But what happened is in the book, Bilbo sees the setup of the armies ready to fight. You know, they're getting ready to fight. And it's a losing proposition, and then he sees the eagles come, and a rock hits him in the head and knocks him out. So none of the battle really occurs in the book. And I didn't realize when I was reading the book why that was. You know, we get a little bit of, you know, Thorin is killed, and a couple others are killed, and they tell you a little bit about how they were killed. But all of the fighting occurs off screen, so to speak, in the book. And I think it was because he wanted to keep the tone relatively light. Even though the deaths are somewhat heavy, you don't actually see them happen. So in the movie, very kind of much, much heavier hand and much darker because we do see the fighting. The orcs are ugly, scary, a lot of stuff that a fairy tale wouldn't necessarily have. We see a little bit too much in our faces. And that's one problem with The Hobbit.
Of course, a fairy tale about a witch that wants to cook some children alive.
Dark
some of those
is in
fairy
the,
tales were pretty
right.
gruesome. Yeah,
yeah, and I think that's a good point because a lot of fairy tales also had
they didn't call them grim for nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, right, exactly. So you know, you could go either way with this. I mean, this is my complaint just because I'm comparing it to the book, but others may think that that's a strength. Instead, this is just how I feel. Something though that I think was a big, huge problem with The Lord of the Rings and actually became a problem with The Hobbit movie is that Jackson does not understand Tolkien's notion of nobility. Tolkien had this idea that people were noble. They could rise to a noble point. And
that's interesting because Tolkien was also a dedicated Christian who believed we had a sin nature. So
right.
For him to believe we could rise to a noble point is saying quite a bit because
yes.
We're rising against incredible odds in our own human nature.
Well, look at there are tons of examples of people, though, rising up against authority
absolutely.
And fighting
history,
for what
yeah.
they believe. Yeah.
Yeah.
And even Christians doing that. So I think this is that's sort of the idea of nobility, people being able to grow up into a position that is respectable. Now, he also had the view that certain people were born into that position. At least that's what I've heard. I don't know if it's completely true, though it does seem to come across a little bit in The Lord of the Rings. The line of the kings was held to a higher standard than the other rulers, that like Aragorn was of the line of kings in The Lord of the Rings, but the people that were there taking over for them were not of the same line, and so they were not quite as noble, so to speak. So the important thing in The Hobbit, though, is the elves were considered to be one of the most noble of all races, and they were born into this. They're immortal. The sin nature isn't part of who they are.
They seem very bigoted in this movie.
Exactly.
Because of the way they responded to the dwarfs.
Right. Yeah,
like, and, no way, I'm working with a dwarf.
Right, and they actually bail out in the middle of the stupid battle. Elves would never have done that. They were... Once they committed,
that's huge. When you go that much against Tolkien's own vision,
right?
That's not paying homage to Tolkien,
right? And this was a big problem that I had with The Lord of the Rings, because for me there were so many characters that showed nobility. One of them was actually even the son of the regent, one of the people that wasn't of the noble line. He showed nobility, and he was totally whitewashed to nothing in the Lord of the Rings movies, and I was so disappointed. And then Treebeard, which was an incredibly great character, was just wrecked in those movies. So I think I talk about this, complain about this every time I'm on, Bob, when I talk about The Lord of the Rings. But anyway, so it came across even in The Hobbit with this, the Elven King character. He was really a butthead, to put it lightly. And you never really had any love or respect or sense that he was this great noble being, which is how they really were conceived to be. Now, the elf female, the girl elf who fell in love
with the dwarf. And she was not invented for the movie?
She was invented for the movie. You get the sense that she was noble, but it was because she was rebelling against this dumb king.
But they seem to be making her kind of a parallel of the elven maiden that loved Aragorn,
right,
too.
It Arwen.
Seemed like they were just trying to do more of that.
So. Yeah, a little bit. I actually liked that they had her be in love with the dwarf, because I knew that dwarf was going to be killed from the beginning, because I obviously
had read
the
book. It's kind of a West Side Story, Romeo and Juliet.
A little bit,
kind of.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But then what happened is he didn't kill... I was hoping he would kill the elf girl, not because I wanted her dead or anything, but because I thought that would be much more dramatic.
Dramatic for the story.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And what ended up happening, though, is she causes the worst line to happen. She sees the love of her life killed, you know, in front of her eyes, dead in front of her eyes. She's not killed. And then the elf king comes up to her and she says, why is, you know, there's so much pain and I want you to take it away and I can't believe this is so terrible and painful. Why is love so painful? And the king's response is, because it was real. And I just wanted to puke right there. I mean, come on. Kill the girl instead. Don't give us bad lines to fill. And it's from the bozo
Only
elf
a
king.
Passionate film, you know, critic would want to see the heroine dead rather than have a bad line.
A bad, yeah, exactly, right. I guess so. So hopefully this will rub off on my own writing. You know, you never know. You don't want to be a victim of your own criticisms, of course. So anyway, those are my complaints about the movie. There were some good things. We got to see, for example... a struggle with sin, in a sense, wherein we see Thorin fighting this dragon fever that they have. And that wasn't how it was in the book. He actually had to fight his own real sin, but it still comes across. He sees himself almost literally going to hell and has to kind of come out of that fever, pull himself up. And that, again, that sense of nobility, that fighting against sin is what he had. And he turns around, he turns a 180, he apologizes. He repents.
Okay.
And that's a great point in the
movie. More nobility, more sin, more film critic Mark Boobin when we return. This is Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Jesus said that his people should be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Some churches take that mandate seriously, others, sadly, do not. I am happy to announce that there are many good, serious churches in San Diego, and Skyline is certainly one of them. Outreaches to the community and the world at large are carried on by our missionary family. Their ministries to the poor, the shut-ins, and the emotionally scarred. There are groups and classes for all ages, from children to middle school to high school, college, young adult, and senior citizen. Skyline is also on the cutting edge of today's social issues. We mobilize people and help them to be a better voice for the changing culture around us. Sunday services are at 9 o'clock and 11 o'clock every week. Skyline Church, located at 94 and Hamishaw. kicking off our new season with some films, looking back at some of the best, some of the worst of the last year, some of the Christmas movies with film critic Mark Boubian.
Thanks, Bob. So I can go on about The Hobbit forever just because I'm such a Tolkien geek, so I think I'll cut it off here and say, you know, let's look at some other Christmas movies. Now, one of the Christmas was actually a very good point for Hollywood in 2014, and The Hobbit showing up as number 7 with only a few months on its, or a few weeks, I should say, on its books, that's a very good thing. And a lot of the Christmas movies did very well. One that did much better than expected was Into the Woods, a musical that I would not see because it's a musical.
Yes.
But
I try to tell Mark that this is at least one musical he would like, which is true this time also, but I'm pretty sure he still won't go see it. It was fantastic. I recognized the brilliance of the lyrics and the style of the music immediately. I didn't even see the credits as being Stephen Sondheim. Of course, I knew this was a Broadway hit, but I didn't know it was Sondheim. Brilliant lyricist. This was one of those movies where within 1 minute, and the only person that's maybe close to being as critical as Mark Boubian is me. And I'm sitting here critical as I am. Within 1 minute, I said, this is going to be a flawless movie. And it was. It took 4 different fairy tales, Jack and the Beanstalk, Red Riding Hood, Cinderella, and Rapunzel, which they based Tangled off of. And they had them all intersect. It was hilarious. It even had some seriousness and some drama in it. The music, no tunes so memorable that you'll go out whistling. There is one that had become famous from Broadway, Children Will Listen. That doesn't mean it wasn't good music. It fit. And I'm telling you, Mark, you would like it. But I said that a year ago about Les Miserables, and I'm sure you still haven't seen that.
No.
One of these days, your wife's... I need to just talk to Kathy and have her tell you that either you watch this movie or it's the couch tonight. We need to do something. You would... It's because I the musicals that you've told me you haven't liked are the ones like Hello, Dolly! That don't have much of a story.
Gosh.
But the musicals you've told me you have liked, The Sound of Music, Fiddler on the Roof, My Fair Lady, very story-driven. This was story-driven. And Mark, I'm telling you... When you go to a Disney animated movie, which you love, they're all musicals.
Right, I know.
What is it with you? If they're if they're animated, but if they're animated, you like, just think of it as a Disney movie that used live actors instead of animation. And by the way, it's by Disney.
Yeah, I know. Right, that's a good point. And
it's probably not
mostly
sweetening
CGI.
I'm telling you, folks, it was and it didn't have that tired stuff of making the wicked people bad and the bad people. There was a little bit of considering how the other side feels, but. Hilarious, brilliant, good acting, good singing. And Johnny Depp as the wolf. And I know you like Johnny Depp.
Oh, Depp. Depends on what he's in.
He's the wolf that's tricking Red Riding Hood.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Well, there you go, Mark.
Okay. I might see it, but, you know, I'm not going to make any promises.
I won't be holding my breath. But,
yes, don't hold your breath.
But maybe somebody else out there is listening. Maybe you'll go see it, even if my friend Mark won't
see
it.
There you go. That's why I wanted you to have a chance to talk about it. Okay, so bouncing off of Christmas and onto a whole different type of subject, really, hopefully not too far off the base here, is a movie that did very well for a particular director, staying on topic with our top box office movies. David Fincher's Gone Girl. David Fincher is famous for doing Seven and Fight Club, some very dark films.
Fight Club was a very interesting movie.
Yeah. I mean, his movies can be interesting and dark at the same time. And he's challenging because I don't think he cares very much for Christianity from what I've seen in his films, just judging by the way he does his art. That's not necessarily, I mean, for his soul, it's a bummer, but for us going to see movies... Sometimes those movies can be more challenging for us as Christians because it's coming from a completely different perspective. Seven, for example, about the 7 deadly sins, I found very challenging. But after talking to a lot of people, I saw I got a lot of great insight, even though I didn't initially like it.
None. I thought it was well done. But to me, a movie should either entertain or have a message or have both. I saw neither in Seven.
Yeah, you could say that. I think
it was well done, well acted, yeah. But it was, for all the gruesomeness of it, I didn't see what message I was taking
away
from it.
Well, there's a lot of people that like horror movies, for example, which is a genre I don't care for myself, but I think it kind of almost fits into that more than the thriller
that was
marketed.
But you have a fun horror movie like Alien, and this was not a fun horror movie.
Well, you're talking about one of the best horror movies ever made.
The first one. The other three I cannot stand, but the original Alien I thought was excellent.
There's stuff like Last House on the Left and I Spit on Your Grave, and those movies are not the highest quality, and they're much I don't know exactly where to put them. They're slasher movies in a sense, and there's not really much message. It's just about going and getting scared, and I think this is higher than that.
But this wasn't that fun, getting scared, because there was I shouldn't give it away for anyone that wants to see this thing, but there was just something very horrible that happened
right
at the end of the movie.
It was, and I think
to a very likable character, and I didn't see the fun. I didn't see the message.
Yeah.
Certainly there wasn't any humor.
See, now you're going to talk about all the reasons I didn't like it that much, but yes, that's
a good
point.
But you're saying that since then some people gave you some insights and gave you a different way to look at a different perspective.
Right, exactly. And that's one of the good things about movies, that even if you find them challenging or you don't like them up front, that talking to other people about them, you can get insight.
And talking about them, doing that Dead Poets Society kind of thing
is
the good thing about the arts.
And I think that's why the arts are such a good springboard
for
discussion.
I was going to mention that when you were talking before about, we were kind of joking about how you'd rather see an unhappy ending than a bad line.
Right.
But actually, I do like movies, and the fiction that I write usually has a bittersweet kind of ending, because I do think those kinds of endings where you don't neatly tie up every thread will provoke people to talk and discuss more. So
right.
I do think there's an inherent value in that.
Right, and I agree with that. And, you know, David Fincher's known for doing dark movies, so when you walk into something like Gone Girl, you know it's not going to be the happiest of all films, and it was a book. I don't know how... I didn't read this particular book, so I don't know how accurate it was to the novel, but the author wrote the movie, so it must be pretty close, or she must be pretty happy about it. But what's interesting about this film is that, well, okay, first off, I think I mentioned it's David Fincher's most profitable movie, which gets it discussed today, which is on target. It's about a man who becomes the main suspect in his wife's disappearance. She disappears from his home while he's out, and he has no alibi. And so he, of course, becomes the main suspect. Now, there's a couple of things.
He's not chased by Tommy Lee Jones, is he?
No, but he would be saved by... Well, right. So that would have actually fit in this movie. That's a little spoiler, but oh well. There's some really great things that I loved in the movie. Some of it having to do with the theme, some of it having to do with the acting, not necessarily the story so much. I did see what was coming in the first 20 minutes of the movie. To my shock, I actually said, oh, this is probably what's going to happen. And then... to me, it was so ludicrous. I was like, no, that can't be it. And then when it got to the end, I was like, oh my gosh, I guessed it at the beginning. But that's, you know, I'm just tooting my own horn. Sorry about that. some good stuff that other people will like that I'm not tooting my own horn on is Tyler Perry is a great Christian filmmaker.
He makes wonderful movies.
Yes.
And
now,
his character, Madea, is just hilarious.
Absolutely awesome. I love Tyler Perry's movies. Now,
I haven't seen one yet that I haven't liked.
This is not a Tyler Perry movie. He's just an actor in it. So this is what's interesting about his role. He plays a lawyer in his own movies, where he's sort of this long-suffering, he has to deal with Madea lawyer. In this movie, he plays a lawyer also, but he is the... not necessarily a bad guy, but he's publicly maligned because he takes cases that can't be won, that are hot in the public spotlight. And he's always upbeat. He laughs at other people's suffering in a sense, but it comes across as such a great character. And
he didn't have anything to do with the writing or producing.
No, he was just hired on as an actor, and he just killed it. It was great.
He's a great actor. All right, we'll have one more segment with film critic Mark Boobian. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out his online column, Forbidden Table Talk, published and hosted weekly by Communities Digital News. Bob is also a regular contributor to San Diego Rostra. We invite you to visit Bob's website at www.bobsiegel.net. You can listen to previous radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and find information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. Bobsiegel.net.
Mark, we're already down to our last segment. Say hello again to film critic Mark Boubian.
Thanks, Bob. These shows go so fast. I love them so much,
well,
and I appreciate
great
you having me on.
Radio always goes by fast.
There you go. Okay. That's a wow. Thank you,
or
Bob.
Or radio with the answer.
There you go.
I'm going to get fired from the station for making fun of their new MO.
Yeah, well, I'll be behind you, Bob, all the way. I'll defend you. You know, or we can hire Tyler Perry. That
there
would be the way
there
to go.
There we go, yeah.
So Tyler Perry's performance in Gone Girl, I think I would call it a breakout because it's so different than stuff he's done before. And, I mean, he swears a lot. There's a lot of swearing in the movie and things that you wouldn't expect Tyler Perry to be doing. So I think that makes it even more of a shock and kind of helps you, I don't know, the difference between who Tyler Perry is and the character he plays is so gigantic that it really ends up being somewhat of a shock, and that works very well in the David Fincher type of movies. So I think he played it well. David Fincher played well by choosing Tyler Perry to be in the movie. Now, what I liked about the movie thematically was it brings the idea of you're innocent until proven guilty everywhere except in the public eye. We can talk about anybody who's on trial or even before they go to trial and call them any kind of name we want, tell people that we believe they're guilty all we want. We can crucify them on the air as much as we want, regardless of whether they're innocent or guilty. And that's one of the things the movie brings out. And what's funny is that there's scenes of news anchors that, you know, you'd see on CNN or Fox or whatever that are just tearing the guy apart without knowing anything about who he really is. They're making conclusions, saying things about him. And
they usually don't offer a lot of apology if the person ever gets exonerated.
None. Right. Yeah. And that's exactly what happens. No apology. But I think that what's great about the film is it brings it into our faces that we know this character probably didn't commit the crime, yet he's being crucified in the most horrifying way on screen. And that's exactly, I didn't see anything that I haven't seen in real life in this film, in the depiction of the news anchors that were doing the crucifying. So I think that that was a great element to the film, that it brings this idea that, you know, maybe we can kind of conclude that maybe it's not such a good thing that we're talking about these people in such a terrible way when we really don't know anything about them and making conclusions and whatever. So I like that because that's sort of a theme that hits home with me in particular. And I've always felt that way. And it was nice for me to see that in a movie. Now, another aspect of the film that people are going to have potential problems with that are Christians, and I like this aspect of the movie, and it was very Christian derived, but it was also the most horrifying moment in the film. And I think people are gonna, if they have seen the movie, I'll probably get calls at home about, are you kidding? That wasn't Christian at all. Well, let me make my case. There's a Fatal Attraction type of scene, actually almost right from Fatal Attraction, where the female lead, she's the gone girl. She actually, the point of the movie is that she's framed her husband for her own disappearance, but she sees him on TV and he reaches her and she wants to come back to him. So what she does is she needs to murder the guy she's with and frame and act like he held her hostage, like that this is the guy that kidnapped me and he held me hostage because she's with this rich guy that had been her
friend. What was her reason for wanting to do this to her husband?
She didn't like her husband. She was unhappy with
him. Then he does something on TV and trying to get her back.
Yeah, it's kind of like he agrees that he needs to be the man she wants him to be, and that's all she ever wanted.
She murders somebody to come back.
Yes, so, okay.
What a lucky fellow he is.
Yes. Yeah. It's pretty shocking. I mean, you see it coming because you know what, at this point in the movie, you know she's being manipulative. And so she's having sex with the guy, and she pulls out a knife and she slices his throat and blood, I mean, it's horrifying. Blood just pours out of this poor guy all over the woman, all over the sheet, everywhere. Just blood gushes everywhere. Okay, now, she's doing this in order to come back from the dead. She's is presumed dead. So she cuts this guy's throat. The blood flows onto her and covers her completely, almost completely. And this opens the door for her return from the dead, so to speak. So, in a sense, this is kind of keying in on the imagery of Christ, whose blood washes us clean from our sin and saves us, gives us salvation, gives us the ability to return from the dead. Now, it's horrifying. It's a twist, in a sense, on the Christian idea of blood washing us clean. And it actually becomes kind of ludicrous how long the woman becomes covered. The reason I think this was a deliberate image is because she's covered in the blood way longer than is even imaginable. I mean, she goes to the hospital. She has a press conference with the FBI. I mean, and then she goes home and, you know, comes to her husband's, falls in her husband's arms. I mean, it must have been a day. And nobody thought to clean this poor woman off. She's got blood all over her. Now, so it's a little bit ludicrous, but it's still, you know, you have to wonder, why did they leave this blood on her? Because it's so obvious. So I think that he's trying to draw in the idea of Christian symbolism into this. And now, again, it's a twisted thing. She murders somebody. The blood gushes on her. It gives her the redemption, so to speak, quote unquote redemption that she needs. But that's all the opposite of how Jesus would do it. It's your ability to turn from your sin, to repent.
Rise above.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she's done the opposite. And actually in the film, the way she gets cleaned off of the blood is she gets into the shower. She has her husband. Her husband demands to know what happened because he knows she framed him. So she's about to tell him the truth. They go into the shower because her excuse is she doesn't want him to have a mic on. She wants to tell him only so that she can't be prosecuted for murder. So she tells him. She comes clean. She tells him exactly what she did and why. And as she's telling him, she washes the blood off of her. So it's her confession. In conjunction with her confession, the blood is cleaned from her. So it's almost like the exact opposite of what we see from Jesus. Her repentance would be her coming clean, but that's what gets the blood off of her. The blood washes us when we repent, in a sense. So
in her case, she's not really repenting of the evil. She's just repenting of the choice to leave this person.
Right, and she's just coming clean because she knows he knows. That's it. And it's the only reason, and she doesn't want to get caught. So, it's not a real repentance in any sense, but, you know, it kind of ties
just
in. Though,
imagery that reminds you.
Yeah, so what I liked about it is that it was opposite all the way through, from beginning to end with the blood. It was the opposite of what Jesus does. It wasn't just this horrible image of Christianity that is twisted and horrifying. I mean, it is that, but that's not all it is. It's like he just took this horrifying image of the blood gushing on this woman and made it the reverse of what Jesus does. So I think that that's a really good image to discuss, and it's a good opening point for discussion, whether or not people would agree. That's the beauty of film and why I like to review movies like this, which would potentially be offensive, but end up potentially also having good imagery and good messages.
Okay, well, Mark, we'll have you back in a few weeks to discuss the Academy Awards, maybe right after the Academy Awards. And we did not get to Exodus Gods and Kings, or as I like to call it, Exodus Directors and Idiots, but I will talk about that on a future show. I'll give you a hint. It stunk. All right, we'll see you next week, everybody.
Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.